Thanks for continuing on with us. I'm taking over from Nina Rosman. This is, of course, Niaga Awani. And, of course, plenty that needs to be discussed when it comes to the equities. Bursa Malaysia has announced that they will close for trading tomorrow on the 18th of November. However, today they're still trading. As of now, the FBM KLCI has shed 2 points or 0.16% to 1,446 points. Losers outweighing gainers, 243 in the red, 155 in the green. Usual suspects are there, including MPI. They are up 8 cents to 26 ringgit 8 cents. We're looking at DKSH, another counter that is off interest, 4 cents. Up to 4 ringgit 47 a cent. And some banks also in the highlight for today, including RHB, up 3 cent to 5 ringgit 53 cent. CIMB up 3 cent to 5 ringgit 38 cent. The issue for this morning is, of course, on the slow trading that has been happening for the past few days, if not weeks. As at 9:30 on Thursday, 17th November, only about 300 million shares done, valued about 200 million ringgit. This has been going on for some time. We are off trading for quite a bit, from the 2 or 3 or 4, even 4 billion shares done before this, but now it's just languishing from the day trades. Now, the question now is whether or not the investors are shying away for the long term, or are they just shying away currently, just during the election period? Joining us on the line live is Liu Ui Han, the CEO of Ringgit Plus. Han, thanks for taking the time to speak with us. Let's do a quick recap in terms of how investors, both equities and otherwise, are looking at the election cycle. Are they, you know, practicing a look and see for the time being, or are they just shying away for now?
I mean, based on what I'm seeing, right, and what my customers and investors are telling me, everyone's got a bit of cautious feel in terms of investing in the markets for the past few weeks, obviously since the election was called, or rather the parliament was dissolved. And rightly so. I think most are telling me now is not the time to take any new positions that you weren't taking before. Now is not the time to gamble. Don't change what you were doing previously until the dust settles, probably after next week.
Okay, talking about the dust settling, there's a lot of writing that is on the wall in terms of this being a hung parliament. No one coalition can perhaps snap up the 112 seats, resulting in many of us expecting a lot of horse trading to happen, a lot of coalition building to happen. That's the more political correct term to use, Han, by the way, not horse trading. But, you know, we don't know whether we are going to see a PM swearing in the wee hours of the 20th of November. We also don't know whether, you know, some of the key cabinet appointments are going to be made in the near future. So how long do you think this whole wait and see approach is going to be applied by the investors?
Yeah, I think, it's good. It's always nice to speculate. It's always kind of fun to speculate. But I think one of the things to look to, right, and one thing I tell investors is, fortunately for us, we have the recent past to look at, right? Which is, you know, the past two or three elections where there have been major upheavals from the previous status quo. In the previous general election, when Pakatan Harapan came to the government, things were very choppy the first day of trading. And that was, you know, a good 5 days after the election on Wednesday. First day of trading on Bursa was on Monday, literally, you know, the 5 days after the election. So, and even on that Monday, it was very choppy. So for me, if, you know, I was a seasoned investor, whether I'm local or overseas, and again, the considerations are different for both, I would stay away for at least the first couple of days of trading after the election. No point gambling on where things are going. We are financial investors, not political investors, if that makes any sense.
It does make a lot of sense. However, there are stocks that are related to government, MyEG, for instance, all the construction companies also. They might too be in focus right now. So some sectors might be a little bit more exposed to governmental exposure than most. How do you think investors are going to approach this whole notion of stocks being related to government?
Yeah, I think, again, if you look at recent history, I think it's the best way to look at it. Best to describe as government-linked stocks or government personality-linked stocks are the ones to stay clear from, purely because of the volatile nature of what you call coalition building during this time, right? You're talking Monday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Things may change. The person you thought might be going up may not be one going up. You know, you cast your mind back to February 2020, March 2020, when we ended up with a prime minister which nobody expected at the time, causing tremendous volatility in markets, specifically on counters linked to, you know, Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin. Whether it was actually relevant to him or not was besides the point, right? There was a lot of speculation happening. So as, you know, long-term investors, if you're looking for exposure in markets, you've got to stay out of the game, keep some dry powder, wait for the dust to settle, probably 2-3 trading days before you take your positions again.
We also have to talk about other markets outside of Malaysia. When it comes to trying to find value or bargain, do you feel now is the time for us to think about, as investors, to think about diversifying our investment exposure in terms of market exposure? Do you feel that it is a good time for us to look at, say, for instance, ETFs and other areas of concern outside of Malaysia, perhaps even China or US and many other markets out there?
Really good point. I think, you know, it's always been a good time to ensure you're diversified, not just, you know, across many counters in Malaysia, but outside of Malaysia. And this time is a good time for me to educate everyone to say, hey, look, you should be looking outside of your home market anyway. Removing home market bias from investors' mindsets, ensuring that, hey, look, it doesn't matter what happens in a specific country, even your own, when it comes to your investment portfolio, you know, classic markets for Malaysians to consider at this time, you know, definitely Singapore, definitely the US, definitely Europe, in terms of diversifying away from this very Southeast Asian and Malaysian specific exposure. Many people don't realize this, but we are heavily, by default, due to things like EPF and PNB, ASMB, very heavily invested in Malaysian equities already. As a nation, or rather as a nation of investors. So it's very important for us as investors to look at our portfolio, including that, and looking to diversify out of just Malaysia.
We know that weaker sentiment is here, considering that general election is just around the corner. The FBMKL index, FBMKLCI index continued to trade lower yesterday, despite stronger recovery from the regional markets. At day's end, the benchmark index fell 13 points or 0.92% to 1,450. Decliners are led by Hartalega, Top Glove, Dialog and DG. Market breadth remained negative. Losers outweighing gainers, 541 to 332. Total of 2.77 billion shares valued at 1.67 billion were done yesterday. And profit taking continued across majority of sectors, although rotational buying interest has been picking up in both plantation names. And we also know that some of the analysts are arguing that the index is going to range between 1430 to 1470. It looks like it's going to be a sluggish day. Now, another contrarian view perhaps is to think about bargain buys. Would now be a possibility of a bargain buy? I know you talked about not being punters or betting, but at the same time, if the price is low, the price is low, right? Now, is now a good time to look at bargain buys?
It's certainly a good time to start analyzing it, right, and preparing your guns post Monday, right? For me, why I say that is very important because if you look back to 2018, when Pakatan Harapan came to govern, big change of government versus what we're facing today, which is hung parliament, even more uncertainty. The volatility in the market on Monday was almost 5%, so a drop from high 1800s down to 1800 itself. You know, so any gains you thought you might have from a cheap buy maybe. Easily wiped out on the Monday itself, right? Or in our case, whenever the next trading day may be. So for me, good times to start analyzing. You know, markets are sluggish. Despite a very strong GDP print from Malaysia last week. So I think, you know, signs are in general trending up for Malaysia, the Malaysian economy in terms of the recovery. We're just literally almost there in terms of GDP, in terms of unemployment. So there will be stuff to buy, but this is not the weekend to start buying. This is a weekend probably to start looking and getting ready to buy in the weeks after.
Okay. Also, ETFs back in the frame right now. On a personal note, I don't buy single stocks. I tend to hedge my bets on ETFs. You know, my horizon, my investment horizon is always long term. I look at it, you know, 10, 20 years kind of a horizon. If I wanted to, you know, make money, I'd probably do business or something like that, not investing in equities. Where are we in terms of market acceptance of ETFs? It's been around for a very long time now. There are players out there already, including that of, say, Stashaway and Wahid. But do you feel that the consumers out there are getting accustomed to this? They're getting more, you know, seeing the benefits of ETFs, or it's still a rather nuanced kind of array of investment asset for investors to go into?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, my first preface is that I love ETFs as a vehicle as well. I think they're very efficient for getting diversified exposure. Everyone who's thinking of not playing the market, not playing specific counters, but just wanting to be invested for the long term should consider ETFs as a wrapper to use. Pragmatically and frankly, the market for ETFs in Malaysia and the region is still very nascent. It's still very niche. There's not enough awareness around the benefits, or you know, pros and cons, mostly pros, of using ETFs versus, you know, self trading, self investing, or even unit trust. Right? What's the difference between an ETF and unit trust in terms of its ability to trade daily live on exchange versus dealing with the investment manager themselves? There are pros and cons to each. But for me, I personally think it's a very useful tool. Every investor should consider it. Speak to your financial advisors, financial planners like myself, about how ETF can play a portion in your portfolio beyond the usual EPF, PNB, ASNB stuff. And they can really add value in terms of diversifying, getting exposure to outside markets.
Another area that we need to look at is, of course, non-equities investment. Private placement is, of course, quite interesting. And peer-to-peer lending as well. Again, these tools are made available already in the market. SE is regulating this sector quite well. Do you feel that the interest in investing straight into the companies would be another good idea in terms of getting greater value for your money from investment as opposed to going through capital markets?
Yeah, I think the best way to describe that, what you described as equity crowdfunding, peer-to-peer, new ways, new tools for investors to use to gain exposure to companies or products or investment products that they couldn't previously. To be fair, this is all capital markets, right? Because it's all about companies raising capital for debt and equity. But in terms of things like ECF, equity crowdfunding, P2P, peer-to-peer lending, both i.e. equity and debt, for me, it's a great move from the SC. In fact, our P2P and ECF markets are quite well versus equivalents in the region. So Malaysia, in terms of ECF, is one of the top places to raise funds via ECF. If you're a small company which don't qualify for the usual, a large stock exchange listing requirements, it's a very good place to find liquidity. But for investors, I'd caution, right? Because these are much smaller companies, typically much higher risk. I would say, hey, look, you can start trying them out, but make sure the portion of your portfolio is very minimal, something less than 10% of your overall portfolio in these little stuff that can get higher returns, but come with a higher degree of risk due to them being much smaller companies typically.
Okay, before we end our conversation this morning, I just want to ask you about some sectorial views. Aviation, for instance, my airline is the new low-cost carrier. My airline is slated to commence commercial operations this month. Would looking at the aviation sector be a good idea, in your opinion?
I've got kind of three big views on that. Specifically for new entrants, if you're not the gambling type, I'd say, hey, look, like if you think about the length of time that AirAsia, for example, over the last 20 years took to gain market acceptance, build their brand, build their capability, I think I'd be a bit cautious about looking at my airline if they were to be listed soon. I'm not saying they are, I'm just saying they were, just be a bit cautious. But in terms of the airline industry, a bit concerned, to be honest. Lots of headwinds due to, number one, uncertain energy prices, outside of our control, arguably, right? They're swinging wildly. They have been swinging wildly this year. If I was in an airline, I'd find it very tough to do hedging to ensure that, my fuel costs are under control. So that's one. Second is, obviously, they've been battered the last 2 years and 2.5 years due to the pandemic. So today it's all about making sure, you know, you rebuild your capital base in order to then, before you start thinking about expanding the fleet. So I'd say we're probably about 3 to 6 months away from the airlines being able to say, hey, look, we've got that full year-end holiday period recovery done, the festive period in the new year done, and we can start looking to now do expansion rather than just reforming our capital base.
Also, technology has always been a sector, a darling sector for Malaysia. Inari Amerton, for instance, is in the frame. China's restrictive COVID zero approach and potential demand softness for Apple's iPhone range will likely subdue earnings for Inari's RF division, for instance. Would companies like Inari be interesting to look at when you were mentioning, you know, we should be looking at stuff? Would Inari and other tech sector be interesting this for this few days or weeks to come?
Really good point. I think let's talk about the global context first, which is globally, technology sector has been terribly battered this past 12 months. Many counters globally are down. We have not been spared from it, with the exception for Malaysia is that we're a little bit more hardware focused rather than software. So we are a little bit more shielded in that respect. For me, in terms of kind of the technology sector, especially those looking at semicon and hardware stuff, I'd wait for this afternoon's export print, see what exports are looking like. If, you know, global exports are looking strong still, that means there's still lots of demand, you know, for chips, lots of demand for consumer electronics, lots of demand for these kind of things. That's on the hardware side. In terms of software, I'm a fintech guy, despite being a financial planner investor. I'm a fintech guy, so I'm very bullish on software. Software is something that I think the more that Malaysian companies do, the better. So I'll be looking at counters for software regardless. But for hardware, I'd say maybe have a look at the export print later this afternoon, see if things are still looking strong despite global headwinds.
Okay, thanks. And also, what's happening at Ringgit Plus towards the end of the year? And what do you have in store for the first quarter of next year?
I mean, can't comment too much about our business roadmap. I mean, but we're looking very strong this year. We are a fintech startup, but, you know, we're moving strongly on the path to profitability. So, you know, you might have heard Ringgit Plus and the Genexu Group fundraising plenty in the past, but we've not really been needing to because of, you know, the strong growth that we've had this year. The year is not over, so I can't share too much about that. We'll probably share a little bit more in terms of how we're doing early to mid next year. In terms of the pipeline, no change. Staying close to our clients, staying close to our customers, ensuring that everybody who wants a financial product can get research on it, can compare, can apply, and get the product that's best for them, right? Whether it's a loan, a credit card, or a wealth product.
Fantastic, Han. Thank you very, very much for joining us this morning. That was Liu Uihan, the CEO of Ringgit Plus. As you heard, plenty in store for them, so do keep an eye out for ringgitplus.com. Nevertheless, some of the investors that are contemplating some of the green shoots as being poised to flourish may come out right now. According to Anand Padmakantan, the regional head equities at Maybank, through his analyst report, they would recommend the following positioning. Interest rates would be a key focus, with sectors benefiting most from moderated rate rise expectations. Unsurprisingly, technology. Third quarter 2022 results updates does show that. Frank Ken, for instance, reported fresh record revenue and margins. Vitrox is on track versus expectations and undershooting iPhone demand. China production issues do pose some drag in terms of the expectations for Inari. Another item that needs to be looked at, perhaps, according to Maybank Investment Banking Group, is China reopening, with the aviation, gaming, leisure stocks as well would be key beneficiaries. And assuming 2019 Chinese tourist numbers can be achieved or re-achieved for 2024, for instance, some stocks that you can think about is Malaysia Airports or MAHB, Capital A, previously called Air Asia. They would see earnings lift around 18% and 43% respectively in terms of airline capacity, which being a key variable. Gen M's earnings would also rise by 8%, given only 4% of visitors to its casino resort are Chinese tourists. Parent Genting's group would see an earnings upside around 10% by casinos in both Malaysia and Singapore. But of course, don't forget that in the US, because Chinese tourists do travel to the US and many of them would probably even visit or patronize Genting Groups. Okay. Other stocks to look at include MMHE or Malaysia Marine Heavy Engineering. This is because their 9-month 2022 results are on track. Maybank Kim Eng does, Maybank Investment Bank, Banking Group do put a buy call on this stock. This is because 9-month 2022 net profit made up 70% of Maybank's full year estimate. And of course, FY 2022 is a turnaround year for MMHE as it continues to show improved operational and financial strength. Meanwhile, they do expect MMHE to deliver strong order backlog, tender pipeline cash earnings over the next 24 months. Maybank remains positive on MMHE. Meanwhile, Hartalega is likely to report losses, so Maybank do put a sell call on this particular stock. Second quarter financial year 2023 net profit of 28 million was below Maybank's and consensus expectations. Management remains cautious on the industry outlook due to stiff competition, and losses are likely to happen over the next two quarters in view of the low utilization rate of 49%. Maybank cut their lower earnings forecast by 23% to 68%, and their target price will be to 1.43 ringgit, down 43 cents from the current situation right now. And an unchanged PR or 19.4x on that. Recent rebound in the stock price may not be sustainable for Hartalega as sector fundamentals remain weak. Reiterate sell. Okay, so those are some of the kind of ideas that we can share with you for the live counters for now. And now we move on to some international news. Wall Street's main indices ended lower on Wednesday as a grim outlook from targets spurred fresh concerns about retailers heading into the crucial holiday season, while semiconductor shares slid after Micron's supply cut. Shares of Target Corp tumbled 13.1% after the big box retailer forecast a surprise drop in holiday quarter sales. Retail stocks slumped broadly, including declines over 8% in shares of Macy's Incorporated and Best Buy Incorporated, and a 7% drop for Foot Locker. The S&P 500 consumer discretionary sector shed 1.5%. The Dow Jones fell 0.12%, the S&P 500 lost 0.83%, and the Nasdaq dropped 1.54%. Gains in defensive areas such as utilities and consumer staples helped mitigate the S&P 500's losses, and the utilities sector rose 0.9%, while staples gained 0.5%. Despite the sales warning from Target, data showed US retail sales increased more than expected in October as households stepped up the purchases of motor vehicles, suggesting consumer spending picked up early in the fourth quarter. Meanwhile, oil prices settled more than a dollar lower yesterday after Russian oil shipments via the Druzhba pipeline to Hungary restarted and as rising COVID-19 cases in China weighed in on sentiment. Brent crude futures settled a dollar lower at $92.86 a barrel, down 1.1%. The US WTI crude futures slid by $1.33 or 1.5% to settle at $85.60 a barrel. The market gave up early gains after Hungarian Finance Minister, Foreign Minister Peter Szijjarő said that flows through the Druzhba oil pipeline from Russia had resumed following a brief outage. The market later recovered some losses after US crude stocks fell more than expected on the back of heavy refining activity. The Energy Information Administration said that the US crude inventories fell by 5.4 million barrels last week, compared with expectations for a 440,000 barrel drop. In China, rising COVID-19 cases weighed in on sentiment after easing on virus restrictions this week. We are going to talk a little bit more about the tech sector, and this is largely because of Elon Musk. Tesla CEO Elon Musk is defending himself in a shareholder lawsuit challenging a compensation package he was awarded by the company's board of directors that is potentially worth more than $55 billion. Musk appeared in a Delaware courtroom yesterday. He denied that he dictated terms to the 2018 compensation package or attended any and all of the board meetings with at which the plan was discussed. The lawsuit alleged that the performance-based stock options right that was granted by compensation committee and approved by Tesla board members who had conflicts interest due to personal and professional attacks, including investment in his companies. It also alleged that the shareholder vote approving the compensation plan was based on a misleading proxy statement that was made recently. The shareholder plaintiffs alleged that the proxy wrongly described members of the compensation committee as independent and characterized all of the milestones that triggered vesting in the stock options as stretched goals meant to be difficult to achieve, even though internal projections indicated three operational milestones were likely to be achieved within 18 months of the stockholder vote. In other news, China. Chinese President Xi Jinping has chastised Prime Minister Justin Trudeau at the G20 summit yesterday for leaking details of a prior meeting during which Trudeau expressed concern about Chinese interference in domestic affairs. The two had a brief encounter at an event in Indonesia that news outlets were able to record. The television camera was behind a Chinese interpreter in clear view of the two spoke. Now, the two shook hands after the brief encounter. Trudeau first spoke with Xi at the G20 last Tuesday. A senior Canadian official government said the two spoke about Russia's invasion of Ukraine, North Korea and climate change, and that Trudeau also raised their serious concerns about interference activities in Canada. The officials spoke on condition of anonymity as they were not authorized to speak publicly about the matter. Meanwhile, Chinese President Xi Jinping continued to call for more cooperation in the digital transformation and developing the digital economy in his address to the third session of the 17th group of G20. This happened, of course, yesterday in Bali. Xi pointed out that the expansion of the digital economy and the acceleration of the global digital transformation now has become much more important and as a factor to influence the global economic landscape. The G20 Hangzhou Summit, hosted by China in 2016, put the digital economy on the G20 agenda for the first time ever, proposing to break a new trail for innovative growth and generate new growth momentum. In recent years, G20 has forged more consensus and promoted more cooperation in adapting to the digital transformation and developing the digital economy, Xi said yesterday. And he then continued to express his hope for all parties to stimulate the vitality of digital cooperation so that the fruits of digital economic development can benefit the people of all countries. Xi Jinping proposed for the G20 countries to uphold multilateralism and strengthen international cooperation. Meanwhile, Indonesia's Minister of Communication and Information Technology said that China is a key development partner for his country and will play a vital role in solving global problems and supporting the progress of developing nations. Minister Johnny Jerrell Plate made his remarks during an interview with China Central Television, or CCTV, on the sidelines of the ongoing G20 summit on the island resort of Bali.
First of all, a very warm welcome to President Xi Jinping, you know, to Bali. The world, Indonesia and the world, of course, waiting for a good policy making, you know, Chinese bringing to this G20 summit. So we hope that China, as the second biggest economy in the world, also hand in hand and join together how to solve the world problem. Indonesia and China have a very good relationship, and we do hope that the year by year we improve and increase our collaborations and cooperations, especially in the economic side, like high-speed rail, railway, also train, high-speed train in Indonesia.
Now, we're going to continue to cover the G20 summit that's going to take place over the next few days. But at the same time, all eyes are on the elections that's going to take place 2 days from now. Last night or last evening, we had a whole host of interviews with Datuk Seri Anwar Ibrahim, Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, as well as Datuk Seri Ismail Sabri, the three most clear prime ministerial candidates. We have also covered a lot of issues when it comes to some of the economic issues surrounding the elections. Watch all my interviews on the economies of elections on Notepad with me, Ibrahim Sani. Those are the kind of interviews that took place on Astro Awani. In the meantime, Bursa Malaysia will be closed for trading for tomorrow, 18th of November, in line with the federal holiday that has been announced by the caretaker Prime Minister, Datuk Seri Ismail Sabri, a few days ago, talking about the 18th and 19th being a holiday. In Johor, 20th November will replace the holiday that will be taking part on the 18th of November. So, with all these holidays in mind, all eyes again are on the elections. We would urge you here on Astro Awani to come out to vote and vote clearly according to your conscience. That's all that we have for you this morning. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.